Thanks. Good morning. Welcome to Star King on this beautiful summer day. My name is Bob Simone. I've been a member of this church for about 3 years, and I think you're in for a special treat today. Instead of having a typical sermon, I've invited 9 members of this church representing each decade of life to come up and speak for about 5 minutes and tell them what life is like for them, where they are in life, what their plans are, and their goals. And this is going to tie in to the theme of the service, which is One Wild and Precious Life. It's the last line of a poem I'll be shortly reading by Mary Oliver called The Summer Day. The Summer Day by Mary Oliver. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean. The one who has flung herself out of the grass. The one who is eating sugar out of my hand. Who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down. Who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I've been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is your plan to do with your one wild and precious life? And to help answer that question, we're going to start with Talon Lunger. I just wanted to point out an error in the order service. We have 3 members of the Lunger family, and it's spelled Unger in the order service. But Talon's going to come up with the help of his mom, I think, to get started.
We're going through a little bit of stage fright right now. Talon, what's your name? Tell him your name. You say Talon? Yep, just say your name. All right, I'm going to speak for him. Talon, what's your name?
Talon Orion Lunger.
Right, is that how you'd say it? Do you remember where you were born? Come on, you can do this.
At home.
He was born at home. What city?
Castro Valley Apple Creek Farms.
How old are you?
7.
And where do you live now?
San Leandro.
And who do you live with?
Melissa, Hannah, Emily, Daddy, Mommy, and Falcon.
And Santiago? Miguel and Santiago? Okay, what do you do during the day? What do you like to do?
On the trampoline.
Jump on the trampoline? What else do you like to do? What did you do this morning?
Ride my bike without training wheels.
And what do you like? Where do you go to school?
Home.
You go to school at home. And what do you like to catch with Hannah?
Lizards.
And what kind of pets do you have?
2 dogs, 3 chinchillas, and 2 lizards, and 1 betta fish, and 1 snake, and
chinchillas, ducks, chickens,
and 2 ducks and 3 chickens.
Did you say anything about chinchillas? What is your favorite subject? Like math, science, history?
Science.
What's your favorite sport?
Swimming.
And what's your favorite color?
Yellow.
Why do you like yellow?
Because of a Pikachu.
What's your favorite hobby? It wasn't cooking. It was...
Eating.
Eating. And when you're a teenager, what do you want to do? What are you going to be doing?
Drive.
Drive? And where are you going to drive to?
Jelly Bean Factory.
Jelly Belly Factory. Every day?
Every day.
Every day. Okay, you're going to go to Jelly Belly Factory every day. And when you're a grown-up, what are you going to do?
Drive.
Drive. But what do you want to be?
Scientist.
You want to be a scientist that does what?
Builds robot Pikachu.
He wants
and
to,
Pokemon.
He wants to build robot Pokemons. And when you grow up, do you want a family?
Yes.
Do you want a little family or a big family?
Big.
Oh, how many boys and how many girls do you want?
3 girls and 2 boys.
Oh, okay.
Alrighty. Hey, you did a good job. Yeah, good job.
Great job, Talon. Now his older sister, Hannah's going to come up.
My name is Hannah Caitlin Lenger. I was born in Sacramento, Kaiser, and I'm 12 years old. My family lived in Stockton when I was born, and I lived with my mom, my dad, my 9 siblings, and my mom's ex-husband in Washington and then Patterson. My mom and dad got divorced when I was 2 1/4 years old, and I lived at my grandma's house with 2 of my sisters in Pleasanton for less than a year. Then we moved into my stepmom's apartment with my 3 older step-siblings. I went to preschool and kindergarten at Sunol Glen School. And then we moved into Apple Creek Farms. And I got to see my brother Talon born at home. I then went to independent school in Cache Valley for 1st grade, and then we got kicked out of the ranch and moved into our friend's trailer, and then we moved into a hotel, and then we moved to Hayward. I started homeschooling when I got to see my brother Falcon born at home. In 2nd grade. We then found a dog on the street. His name was Chase, and he was the first dog I ever had. And then we moved to St. Leandro Hills. I did painting class in the summer, and my pets are 2 ducks, 3 chickens, 2 lizards, 3 chinchillas, 1 snake, 1 betta fish, and, yeah, and 2 dogs. In 3 years, I'll be 15 in high school, probably homeschooling still, and my hobbies will be sewing, painting, cooking, baking, flute, gymnastics, and singing. In 5 years, I will be, in 3 years I'll be 15. In 5 years I'll be 17, still probably homeschooling, and I'll be driving. In 10 years I'll be in college trying to be a marine biologist or a vet. I want to go to Cal State Monterey Bay College or UC State Santa Cruz. UC Santa Cruz. In 20 years I'll be done with college, and I'll be 32. I'll be working at my job. I want a husband and 3 kids, and I want to live on a ranch or a farm in Florida.
Thank you. And somehow we're going to do the reading now for Laura Navarro.
Hello. Good morning. My name is Laura Navarro. I'm 25 years old. I was born and raised in San Francisco. I have three brothers and two sisters. Growing up with old-fashioned strict parents who planned my life to their standards, from what career path I should take to how I should carry myself and who I should be with, not knowing that what they had planned for me was not who I was nor who I wanted to be, but the opposite. Till 4 years ago, I got the courage to not follow the plans they had for me anymore, but to stand up for who and what I wanted to be. I am a smog technician who loves art and has tattoos, who does not hide behind the makeup and clothes I used to wear because that's the way a woman is supposed to look according to some social standards. The way I look now makes me feel confident in ways I didn't feel before. I fell in love with an amazing woman and became a mother to a beautiful child. I don't really like to make plans for my future because I feel that things don't always turn out the way you plan them to be. So I live life one day at a time, appreciating each day that goes by and the people I am living it with.
Okay, now we're going to have her partner, Ziomara, come up and speak. Representing 30-something, although she just turned 40.
Yesterday.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Well, you guys heard, my name is Ziomara. I am on my last days of viewing my life through the window of my 30s life. I was born in the state of Michoacán in Mexico. Born in a divided between Christian and Buddhist home, my parents both had different views of what religion was. At the age of 3 years old, my parents decided to move to the U.S. My father, as an engineer that he got offered a job in the Silicon Valley. At the age of six, my siblings and I also experienced experienced what a divided home life was, not only religiously, but between parents. My parents decided to get a divorce. At the age of six, I saw my life change. I was no longer 6 years old. I was a 10-year-old and had become a co-mother to my siblings because my mother had to work the strawberry, the cabbage, the garlic, and the artichoke fields in the valley. She had become my mother, and she had become my father, and the sole provider of our home. Now I'm 15 years old, and we no longer live in the fields. We have moved to the city life. My mother remarried. She found a man who gave her worth and no longer had to work the fields. I'm 16 years old, going through a very hard stage in life called adolescence. Tragic. I had been replaced by this wonderful man. The first year was difficult to adapt. I was no longer an adult. Then I realized I'm no longer on the hook. I'm off of it. I was free to be a full-blown teenager. I was now officially on the roller coaster of teenage life with ups and downs, twists and turns, ins and outs. More ins than outs. 10 years later, I found myself and opened the doors to my invisible closet and freed myself mentally and emotionally. I had now recovered my freedom. I became a person who planned every single detail of her life because I didn't want to have the life that my mother had. Not that it was a bad one, but that's not what I wanted for myself. At this time, almost everything that I had planned had come to play, but not everything that we plan is a perfect fit for us. I have come to terms with that. I have a beautiful daughter and a wonderful life partner. If your beautiful, crazy life gives you lemons, make lemonade. But if it gives you rich chocolate, make a cake and share it.
Carolyn Longer, the mother of the children we saw speak earlier.
My cousin always wanted me to write an autobiography, but I was always a little shy about it. Felt it would be a little dark and depressing and a bit unbelievable, so I just never did. But it looks like you might get a preview of it if I should ever write it. I was born in San Francisco in 1972 to two Chinese immigrants who came to this country with $5 in their pockets, speaking two different Chinese dialect, and somehow built their 21 years of marriage around broken English. My father was a jack of all trades, from being the first Chinese unionized bartender to waxing strip joint floors, and my mom was an amazing seamstress. And our basement was the sweatshop I grew up in. I spent part of my time preschool commuting to Walnut Creek and Danville, where my dad had his store selling the clothes my mom made, and, you know, attending preschools out there in the 70s. My summers, weekends, and holidays were spent with my grandfather in San Francisco Chinatown, eating dim sum with her 16 siblings every morning. Cantonese was my first language, and my second and third was Shanghainese and English. By 7 years old, my parents joined forces and together got into business and started their own manufacturing business of women's wear in our basement. And I was surrounded by rolls of fabrics, rows of sewing machines, and buzz of fabric cutters. I took my naps on those cutting tables. My dad, though, was adamant I went to the best private school possible in San Francisco, and it was Hamlin School for Girls where I started my education. And I had to learn French and English at the same time. And I was expected to assimilate as much as possible. I spent most of my childhood totally enamored by my dad, yet also terribly terrified of him. He had this horrific temper where my mom and I both got the brunt of his physical brutalities. We had broken jaws, broken bones, pulled hairs, eyes poked, that kind of stuff. I'd wake up and the house would be destroyed. Televisions would be broken, plates, glasses knocked over. He was just rage. But despite all of this, my mother never spoke about this publicly and says to this day, what goes on in the house stays in the house between husband and wife, and it's a private matter, and it's no one's business. She remains a strong supporter of domestic violence, even though she states she's an independent working woman. Very interesting perspective I got growing up. I became a big sister to my little brother at age 8. That's kind of when my world started to really fall apart. By 12 years, my parents had a factory of 300 employees on 20th and Florida Street in San Francisco, as well as one in Hong Kong. So my parents had a son, which was my little brother, and my life worsened even significantly. I was left on my own quite a bit at this factory and became violated by 3 of his employees. But one positive out of that whole situation was that I was exposed to Spanish. I was finally able to make a break from the all-girls school and attend a private co-ed school in Marin. I was the token kid, Chinese kid from San Francisco. And it was during this time my dad was gone 80% of the time and found his second family for about 4 years, unbeknownst to us. He was married to this other woman while still married to my mom. Somehow he made that manage. My mom, when she found out, lost it, got divorced, and remarried within 6 months, and then entered my stepdad, who was a nuclear physicist and taught at Cal State East Bay. And he made my house and home implode all over again. My father moved permanently back to China, and Basically, I was an atheist all of my childhood. A Bible was not allowed in my home. Nothing religious or spiritual was allowed to be discussed. Despite being born in an atheist family, I got to stay with some Jewish, Catholic, Protestant families growing up and was able to attend their worship. So I learned Jewish Bible or Jewish words like Baruch Atah Adonai, I knew how to say those and other things. So it was an interesting childhood. But by my 20s, my mother and stepfather had a son, and my dad had two kids with his second family. I never really knew them. I had then lived in 14 children's homes from Reedney to San Leandro due to my placement by CPS as a result of the sexual abuse by my dad's employee and stepfather, and made it out of the system relatively alive, and was a pre-med college student at Mills College in Oakland, which I later regrettably changed my degree to education. I worked as a preschool teacher to support my way through college at various schools in the East Bay and at Mills College Children's School. I was a mother to a boyfriend's son named Brandon Lechuga Moran for several years. Later, I was engaged to an African-American orthopedic medical student, left him to be with my oldest son's father because I thought dating a medical student was tedious. And I became pregnant. I left my oldest son's father at knife point right after his father and brother were shot by the OPD over a pit bull. It was all over a pit bull, and there was a shootout between the police officer and the two and my son's father and uncle. My dad returned back to the States when he found out I was pregnant and held me hostage for several days without food and water in a hotel until I agreed to a second and third trimester abortion in China. I kind of fought this. My little brother also helped me escape, and I was completely disowned for 20 years for being unwed and having a black child. My son, Brandon Emmett Emmanuel Char-Lee, was born 4 months later with multiple disabilities. I then married an Alameda County Sheriff deputy who was 26 years older than me, who knew the cop who was shot by my son's uncle. At that time, in my adolescence and early adulthood, I was a Wiccan, and my little half-brother on my mom's side was born when I was 17 years old. So I was practically like a mom to him. By my 30s, I had lived in Berkeley, East Oakland, North Oakland, Albany, Byron, Dublin, San Ramon, and home birthed two more girls named Dakota Brianna Charlie and Sage Autumn Charlie, and was a full-time homeschooling mom of three. I was, at that time, diagnosed with a kidney disease, but at 28 years, I became a born-again Christian at a fundamental church in Pleasanton and was baptized. By my 40s, I divorced my ex of 10 years, became an EMT and certified nurse assistant, and worked on ProTransport 1 ambulance and Highland Hospital emergency room and trauma center in Oakland. I decided to go back to nursing school at Mills and Merritt College as a single mom of three. I literally dragged my three kids everywhere on campus. I was a Baptist for about 8 years and attended Neighborhood Church, Castro Valley First Baptist Church, and Fairway Park Baptist Church in Hayward, where Emily, Melissa, and I were baptized together. We had lived in a one-bedroom with six kids, a ranch in Castro Valley, a trailer in a backyard in Hayward, a hotel in Union City, a house in Hayward, and finally landing in San Leandro. By 44, I got married to John Lunger, my husband over there in the green, whom I met on MySpace trying to recruit him to a single parents ministry at Neighborhood Church in Castro Valley. Spiritually adopted three girls, Emily Leanne, Melissa Brianna, and Hannah Caitlin Lunger. Lost my three older kids to my ex-husband, the Alameda County Sheriff Deputy, and had two more babies, Talon Orion and Falcon Jet Lunger, and became a grandmother to a granddaughter named Ella Rose Schulting. I was able to attend her birth at the San Leandro Kaiser, a year and a half ago. John and I started and ended a nonprofit teaching kids technology skills, and I became a homeowner after a brief contact with my dad and hope not to move anytime soon again. I learned ASL to communicate with my youngest son, and I started attending here, April? I think April. Yeah. By 45, I will still be a member of Star King and will further my skills in ASL and still happily married to my husband, John. By my 50s, I will still be homeschooling as my youngest will only be 15 years old, enjoying quieter evenings with my husband while seeing the older kids off to college and starting their own lives. By my 50s, by my 60s and 70s and 80s, I'm hoping that my memory will be so bad that I won't remember any of the nightmares I've been through. My hearing will worsen, and I will personally need ASL for myself and putting all the work in learning ASL into good use. I will be reunited with my older three kids and my granddaughter, and hopefully will have many more grandchildren coming in and out of my house disturbing my slumber. I will finally become a falconer with my awesome husband by my side.
The things you learn in something like this, huh? Scott Kinnear is going to come up next and represent the decade of the 50s.
Morning. I was born and raised in the Seattle area. Shortly after I graduated high school, Joyce and I got married. Not too long after that, the local economy tanked and I lost my job. I ended up joining in the military. I make a point of these chain of events since Joyce and several other people, more than a few in the military, let me know over the course of time that I was the most unmilitary person that they had ever seen in uniform. In the initial battery of tests that the military gave me, they said I was remarkably open and accepting of other cultures. Granted, over time, I found this applied to food somewhat more than other things. However, I am sure that there are still more great dishes to be discovered, so the search goes on. As my initial military training neared its end, I found out one of the places I could be sent in my career field was Europe. Oh, yeah. We spent 3 years in Germany and went to see castles or villages that dated back to medieval times and the restaurants nearby whenever we got a couple of pfennigs to rub together. This was back before most of Europe had adopted the euro. Our daughter Amy built castles with her building blocks rather than houses, and the travel bug started to take hold. We did not get the chance to do much traveling after we left Germany until after both of us finished college and came here. Once we had jobs, we managed to put aside some money and we went to Hawaii. Loved all the tropical plants, the lava fields, Kahlua pigs, and Mai Tais. We went snorkeling. Amy was faster than her parents were in getting her gear on and was in the water before us. Then she starts yelling, "There's fish! There's fish!" I thought that was nice, but not all that surprising since the ocean is where a lot of them live. We rushed since she was so excited, but what could be the big deal? Then I lowered my face into the water and found myself in what I would swear was a tropical fish tank. Now we were fully and completely hooked on the whole travel thing. Frankly, we both had pretty bad jobs at the time, and it had rained here in the Bay Area every day for 3 months. We found ourselves in Hawaii on vacation, looking at the employment section of the local newspaper and asking ourselves, do we really have to go back? Since then, we've traveled at least once a year outside the continental United States. We have seen some marvelous sights, experienced local customs, and eaten some fabulous ethnic dishes. We have both have much better jobs now and have found a wonderful church community. However, the question, do we really have to go back, has never really left us, although we have found that the answer has changed. It's not so much that life is better elsewhere, but it is different. Joyce and I are beginning to get beyond our middle age and starting to think about bucket lists. And although we still have quite a bit of our lives ahead of us, we want to see, touch, experience as much of the world as we can before we leave it. We are moving to Panama and intend to spend considerably more time traveling, seeing new places, experiencing new cultures, and maybe even discover a new favorite dish.
And now LaVon Hodges is going to come up and speak for the 60-somethings. And Wayne, can I just ask you to turn the fan up?
Good morning. My name is LaVon Hodges. I was born in Oakland, California. I lived with my parents and younger brother briefly in Berkeley. Then we moved to El Cerrito, and that's where my brother and I went to school. We went to a congregational church there, which is now a United Church of Christ. And my parents would not go. My father would not. He said, I'm not giving my money to any church. And my mother was raised a Catholic, and it just wasn't her thing. So my father's idea was, when my brother and I were growing up, if you want something, you earn it. If you want to drive, you want a car, you're going to go to work and earn it. Or if you want to dye your hair or pierce your ears, you're going to go to work and earn it, which is exactly what my brother and I did. I graduated from Kennedy High School in Richmond and got a job right out of high school at the Naval Supply Center. Then I was doing volunteer work at the, it was Brookside Hospital at the time. Now it's all closed down. And I thought I wanted to go into nursing school, so I went to nursing school briefly, and I said, sticking people with needles is not my thing. So then I eventually got married, which was called a starter husband, and he was very. His mother's idea was I just wasn't good enough for him. But then, well, maybe the other two wives he had weren't either. So I said, so then we divorced after 9 years. Eventually, I got on with Alameda County and got on with the courts. And after 27 years, I retired and then did contract work for a year. And then, as my contract work was coming to a close, one Sunday I was here at this church, which we've been here for 11 years with my wonderful partner Walt, 23 years. So Sue Merrill, the director of South Haver Parish, gave a talk about volunteering. I said, I'm going to be retiring in a couple of months. Why don't I try to volunteer there? Okay, I got in. Well, we could use somebody in the office to do the data input. If you want to come in 2 days a week and do that, that'd be great. So I've been doing that for the last 2 years, and then people come in and shower, and you hear the basic stories of I can't afford to pay rent and feed my kids too, or if I find and they're homeless, if I find a place to stay, can I find one, or can I afford it? And this is what I hear twice a week. Then I also go to take classes at the senior center in Union City, and I tell them I'm 66 years old. They say, "Oh, you're still a baby." I said, "Well, I don't feel like a baby." Walt and I take a Tai Chi class. Our instructor is 87 years old. She just says, "Well, if you make a mistake, don't worry about it." So I go and take class, and I do take the arts and crafts class, and I have one cousin that just had her 9th and 10th grandchild, so I'm knitting blankets for both their grandchildren, as I have her the other 8 before them. And then my church family here, if somebody has a baby or needs a prayer shawl, I knit for them. And then I saw this poem online called "Each New Day" by Pierre Fredericks. Why is this blank page staring back at me, mocking like an affliction and fraught with dread? How can it hold such sway, this simple emptiness? Might instead be a gift left on my doorstep overnight, waiting to be broken open with the dawn? A present eager to emerge. If only I had the sense to hold the paper over a candle flame, its lemon juice message appearing like magic, clear and true. Each new day is like this, pure air, devoid of density, but for the weight of our own invention. Birds do not worry the morning or fret the rising sun. They wait, expectant, until its rays kiss their downy necks. Then, stretching, they turn to face the day and sing. And also, from the song by Will Ferrell of Happy, happiness is the truth, and that's what I want to think when I get to my 80s. Happiness is the truth.
Now I'd like to invite up Mary Shields to speak about 70-somethings.
Good morning. Good morning. To say I'm nervous would be an understatement. When Bob Simone first asked me to do this several weeks ago, my first response in my mind was, no, I don't want to do that, you know. And I came up with some good excuses why I didn't want to do it. But I'm representing the 70s, the 70th decade of life. And I reminded myself that one thing I'm trying to do and one thing that's happening as I age is I'm getting braver. So here I am. I'm not used to microphones either, so if someone can't, I hear this is a good one, it sounds good, but if someone can't hear me, let me know. And I have two heroines that I'm channeling as far as speaking in public, and that would be Michelle Obama and Hillary Clinton. So I was born in Detroit, Michigan during the Second World War. I didn't know it at the time, of course, but this war would change everything. For one thing, women would come into the workforce in large numbers because so many men had to go to fight in the war. That would dramatically change women's roles in our society forever. And the world would experience the horror of the atomic bomb for the first time. I didn't know it at the time, but my future father-in-law, who was black, was a soldier in Europe in the war, in that war, World War II. Many years later, turn the page, I would listen as he talked about the severe prejudice he experienced in the Army as an officer in an all-black regiment in World War II. How he felt he had to continually prove himself. But I'm jumping ahead. When I was 7 years old, my family moved to Milford, Michigan, a small town about 30 miles outside of Detroit. Looking back, I realize we may have been one of the early families in the so-called white flight away from inner city Detroit. My father became the first full-time dentist in this small town of Milford, and he practiced there for almost 50 years. So I grew up in the country on 10 acres in the middle of a beautiful woods with horses, with a wonderful, happy family. I didn't realize it at the time, of course, but I was living the life of white privilege. The only black person I knew when I was growing up in this small town was our cleaning lady, Helen. I remember visiting the small shack where Helen and her sickly husband lived. I didn't know it at the time, but my mother was teaching us the importance of treating everyone with kindness and respect, and of sharing the fruits of our privilege. Jumping ahead to 1967, when I was 24 years old, I married Jim, a black man, in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where we both attended college. I didn't know it at the time, actually. I was very naive. I was born in a small town with no people of color. Anyway, 1967, I learned later, happened to be the year that the Supreme Court overturned the laws against interracial marriage, which still existed, or were still on the books in many states. I didn't even know it the year I got married. And I don't think they were in Michigan, but anyway. My husband and I moved from Michigan to the Bay Area in 1970 so he could get a master's degree in voice from Mills College, where they do have men in the graduate departments. Yay, Mills. They would send him letters, "Dear Mills Girls." He did many things. He was a Renaissance man, but he sang in the San Francisco Opera Chorus for many years. For the most part, so-called mixed marriages were more accepted in the Bay Area than they were in the Midwest. But as I look back, I'm more acutely aware, and I wasn't as much then when we were living through it. I'm more acutely aware of the heavy toll that prejudice took on my husband, who was a highly educated and very sensitive black man. At the time, I didn't fully understand the cancer that is racism. I wasn't fully aware of all the privileges that I experienced simply because I was born white. So, in my 70th decade of life, I feel a deep responsibility to actively work for justice for all people in our country and in the world. And in my daily living, I try to follow a very simple and general rule that my life experiences and my parents, especially my mother, taught me. And the rule I try to follow is be kind, because everyone you meet is fighting a hard battle. Thank you. I made it.
I know we're running a little late, but we just have one more representative. Dick, you want to come up and speak for your decade of life?
Well, I'm halfway through that decade of life. And having a bad memory is something that has visited me quite strongly, so I didn't remember to prepare anything to say today. Not that I am unused to public speaking, since I was a school teacher for 40 years. But what am I going to say? Not very much. I think instead of saying anything, I think I'll recite a poem. A poem keeps going through my head, a poem I wrote many years ago. And it's about a dead bird. Want to hear it? Good. You have no other choice. Dead, the body of a bird is light, a single feather hovering for flight. The only sign of death, a liquid streak egging a silent parted beak. Most of nature dies with heaviness. Even the leaf presses the brown earth. Birds do not die like secret elephants in a jungle, or like men who huddle their dead under earth out of sight. Birds die poised for instant flight. Thank you.